Hi, everybody. Welcome to this special episode of We Gotta Talk. Going back to my news roots today, popping in with a little bit of a breaking news episode. You know how I love to keep you informed on what's happening in the world. It is way too easy to stick your head in the sand, especially when you're fortunate enough to live in a place that does not see some of the real deal stuff that's happening in the world. So I like to call these segments news for normies. Normal people want to know what's happening. I understand it's difficult to get a grasp on some of these issues that are happening on the world stage. So thankfully, I'm connected to a host of amazing experts from my background in news that help us break down in simple terms what's happening, why you should care, and what could happen next. So today I am joined by someone to talk specifically about what's happening in the Middle East as it relates to Iran's recent attack on Israel. I have Christopher Hinn. He's a former senior Middle East advisor for the Department of Homeland Security. He is currently CEO and managing director of C7 International, which is an agency that connects U.S. and Middle Eastern businesses. And he has deep roots in the Middle East and knowledge of all of the political systems at work. So naturally, he is the person to bring in to break down what's happening and what potentially could happen next. Christopher, thank you so much for joining me. And it's great to reconnect after leaving news. We used to talk all the time.
Thank you, Sunny. Thanks for having me.
So right now, the latest is, depending on when you're listening to this, this could be out of date, but we're going to get this episode up as quickly as possible. Israel is currently weighing how to respond after that barrage of missiles that Iran fired into the country just over 24 to 48 hours ago, depending on when this goes up. There is a lot to get to go over here, Christopher. So I want to start off by asking, what do you expect to happen next after Iran's missiles were mostly, and there was not a lack of casualties, there were some people hurt, and from what I understand, one person killed, but was it mostly an act of aggression to prove we are in this to fight, or will there be another attempt from Israel to retaliate after that?
Well, you asked me two separate questions, but one in particular. In my humble opinion, I don't believe Israel will retaliate, because it could be very costly to the whole region. I don't think the world is ready for another war. We're not ready. We are already in deep financial struggle with our good administration here. Good or bad, we can't afford it, nor that the Middle East can afford it either. We have two wars in fluid right now, the one with Russia, and the one between Israel and Hamas, not the Palestinian people, Hamas. I think our president made good advice, or give Bibi Netanyahu good advice not to respond, because that would be a mistake. And I'm the first to tell you, I knew Iran would have probably done something just to show that they react to respond to something, because they had to respond. But I don't think they'll do anything else. And the only reason they responded is because when you attack a sovereign country, which is their embassy, there's innocent people there. And any embassy, forget it's Iranian embassy in Syria. Let's take if it was an Israeli embassy or a U.S. embassy. When we got hit in Benghazi, that would have been a huge problem for us. We would have reacted and retaliated, so as Israel would have done the same thing. And that's where I think I don't see that as bad as it could have been.
Can I hop in with a question, though? The attack that happened at the Iranian embassy, from what I understand, was it a leader of the IRGC? And is that group not considered a terrorist organization by the United States? And I'm wondering that not for like, oh, let me prove a point purposes, but if that sort of clarifies the military reason why something would be a viable target and something wouldn't. Doesn't the classification of the commander who was killed working under that regime put it into a different class when it comes to warfare, quote unquote, rules? Or is that not true?
Well, first of all, I think we look at Iran as a terrorist organization, period. We don't look at them as a sovereign country. Remember I said sovereign country in Syria, okay, as an embassy. It's a diplomatic mission. It's nothing to do with that. It belongs to that country. But to go back to your question, Iran is considered to the United States as an enemy. Okay, although we give them billions of dollars, I still don't have an answer for that, but they are according to most of Americans, they're our enemy. They're not an ally. So having said that, I believe that Iran has done something to protect themselves. Now, on the outset of all this is I believe that it would cost them a lot more to continue this attacks, because Israel will retaliate eventually, because Israel is known to come after governments. And I mean, look what they've done in Gaza, or look what they've done in Lebanon. Look what they've done over the years of history. They've always retaliated against Lebanon and on and on and on. But I don't think this one, if you value and you do the check and balances, I don't think it'll be worth it for them and for the rest of the region and for the world.
Since the attack by Iran on Israel, we've heard several countries and leaders of several countries come out in support of Israel, namely Saudi Arabia and Jordan, voicing their support, their condemnation of the attacks, and I guess you could say indirectly support of Israel in that way. I want to know what to make of that, and does that, I know that allyship is a complicated proposal between a lot of Middle Eastern countries, and I don't presume to understand a lot of it, but in my brain, that sounds like a development of sorts to see leaders of two countries come out and condemn that. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that voicing of support on behalf of those two countries?
Before I do that, there was one more comment I wanted to make. You notice in the drones, the 300 plus drones, not one hit a human being. So they're all very specifically guided towards areas that were, why? They could have had those focused on or targeted Tel Aviv, Haifa, Jaffa, Jerusalem, anywhere. But that was not the case. And why? They just wanted to send a message. Okay, now, answer your next question. Since the Abrahamic Accord, Saudi's not part of it. All of a sudden, Saudi is the first country outside the Abrahamic Accord to stand with Israel, which is huge in the Middle East. Jordan, they've had a good relationship with Israel since 1993-94. So it's expected, but for them to come out also, because that's their neighbors, okay? So Iran is not loved in the Middle East. They looked as the big evil. And now, you know, I spent a lot of time in Dubai. I feel safe and safer than the U.S. By 100,000 times.
Why is that, Christopher?
Well, first of all, the leadership. Second of all, the way it's structured, the way they control, you want to call it, you know, I mean, it is what it is. The government is controlled by a ruler. Also, the leader or the leader of the law enforcement, he's I happen to know him very well. He runs the country, I mean, the city, pretty tight. I mean, and just a little example. I lost my wallet in Dubai, and I had all my credit cards, my IDs, and my passport card in it. I was freaking out. I called Dubai police. Within 1 hour, my wallet was returned to me exactly the way I had it. Not one thing was missing. Now, think about that for 1 second. Where could that happen in the U.S.?
Well, also, we are, I don't want to speak out of turn, but we're not under penalty of potential, like
no there's
bodily
no
injury, right? I mean, right, no, what, okay, no. So what is the penalty? Like,
you're
misinformed. What are the rules?
Misinformed. That's a bunch of hogwash.
Okay, penalty. Yeah, tell me more. This is like why we're here, is to correct these interpretations.
Penalty is if you get caught stealing, you're gonna get fined and go to jail like anywhere else.
Same. Okay, I just watched
there's
that
no cutting the hand. That's maybe in Saudi
well,
or something.
In Iran that's there's a different
Iran is another. Look, right. You're dealing with, you know, the Shiites, the Sunnis, but we're not going to go there. You're dealing with a much modern world. Dubai, to
in
me.
In the UAE, right.
In the UAE, it's much more advanced in any place that I have been all over the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I travel for a living. It's probably the best place to live, to enjoy safety. You can walk with your kids and leave your kids in the mall at 11 o'clock in the morning, come back 3 hours later, nobody would touch them, talk to them. Mm-hmm. You're a little one.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah. It is wild. I mean, you leave your computer, you leave your wallet, come back and you'll find it in 1 hour, 2 hours. Nobody will touch it. And I've tested it myself. Okay.
So, I know I like that we're correcting this because it can be easy to paint with a broad brush stroke at times. And there are a lot of strong forces at play in that region. And I want to make sure we're discerning what is actually happening where.
Well, look, if you break the law, there's harsh penalties, there are fines. If you write a bad check, they put a travel ban. You cannot leave the country until you, of course, mm-hmm, if you steal from somebody and they report you, you will get fined.
Right.
You'll get a fine. And if you come back in the country, they won't let you in.
So back to how these multiple countries and forces are at play in this particular instance of aggression between Iran and Israel. If we were explaining it in the crudest of terms and we're saying team one and team two, it does appear Israel has not gotten vocal support in anything they've done recently, it seems like, from any other country in the Middle East. And it felt like a changing of tides in a way to see Saudi Arabia and Jordan sort of come out and condemn those most recent attacks. Am I misreading that? Or if so, how?
Well, they know the potential danger that could bring to the region. They know the cost of a war. And they know where we are today. I mean, if you look at your gas prices, you look at the cost of living, I mean, it's high everywhere. But look at the lives that they're going to be lost because of just what? To show your muscles?
So what do you think of President Biden's response so far? There has been reports that he's come out and also urged Israel not retaliating at the moment. What do you think of his current either lack or show of support, depending on how you view it when it comes to Israel?
I hope he stays the course. He doesn't change his mind or he forgets what he said. But I think right now that's the right decision to make, because the other decision would have been much more harsh on the U.S. as well, because that's involved the U.S. And as I said earlier, we cannot afford it. What I mean by that, military-wise, financially, we are going to have to support the war, and we're supporting the Ukrainian in Russia. I mean, we're supporting the Ukrainians. We're supporting Israel. How much more can the taxpayers pay for?
Right. We're not going to get into Israel and Palestine proper right now, because that's a whole separate conversation that requires a separate list of questions and inputs and things. But I do wonder if things stay as they are, meaning Israel does not retaliate after this, and there is a period of calm, at least for the next, several weeks. How does that or does that not aggravate what's already happening between Israel and Palestine? And what are the other forces at play that could impact that? Because that is also the main area of focus, I know, right now when it comes to U.S. support of Israel. I mean, that's where things are going right now. So assuming things stay calm on the Iran front, how does that impact what could potentially happen right now between those two places?
Well, if things stay quiet, it might actually help the situation. Mm-hmm. If they get aggravated, it's going to intensify the situation. Why? Not only that Saudi got involved to support Israel, you got Turkey. You got, I'm talking about big countries with military background. You got Russia. You got UK. You got France. I mean, a lot of those countries will get involved. And if there is a war started, it's only going to get worse. If there is peace or some sort of talks, and they will talk. There's going to be they may talk through Oman instead of, they'll probably meet through a third party. And Oman is a good neutral, or Qatar. But let's say Oman would be more appropriate for them, for the Israelis and the Iranians to speak through, to trying to find a resolution. And that's the only solution at this stage. because, but if they decide to go the other way, I think you will see a tremendous amount of other countries that will start rising up.
And it could also mean that we, as the U.S., would have to get involved in a military level that would what require troops, boots on the ground style thing if it were to escalate? Or I mean, what's your view on that if it does get to that?
How much do you remember of the Gulf War in 2003, 1990?
One? I mean, enough, yeah. Enough to remember it didn't go well.
We got involved in something we should never got involved in. So here's another one. What are we going to do? I mean, I know Iran is a whole different Gulf.
Yeah. I think the question that I have, and I want to reiterate my gratefulness of you being patient. And for anyone listening who's like, these are stupid questions, or how could you not know? You probably don't know this stuff either, unless you grew up there. So save your judgment. Christopher is the perfect person to ask. And I feel able to have these honest conversations with you because we know each other well. And I do think so many Americans are coming at this with a certain set of beliefs and facts that are incomplete, given that so few of us have lived or spent considerable time there. So I want to express gratefulness for your patience as I admire,
you know, I've been in the U.S. for so many years. I love the people in the U.S. I admire them. Unfortunately, some maybe just not educated on the region, not educated in the culture. The combination of not knowing about their religion and what it does or what the requirements are and what are the obligation of the religion. You know, somebody asked me that not long ago, and they were just talking out of their not zero knowledge. And I said, what you need to do is go back to your mother's womb, and she has to be a Middle Eastern or from the region, and come back out. And then you can talk about this, because until then, you don't know much. And that's
It's really hard though, Christopher. And I don't think that America is without its faults, but we are basically a secular democracy, right? Our principles have been informed by biblical principles. And I know there's an argument to be made that there is a religious influence on the way we're governed. But I do think it's disingenuous to say that it is comparable in any way to places, for example, like Iran, that are heavily influenced by religious beliefs and down to the way that they govern and rule their people. So it's hard because we're coming at it from a really different perspective. That being said, we hear a lot about the dangers of the current Iranian regime and how they're punishing and hanging men and killing women over relatively innocent things. And it's hard not to look at that as like a big bad wolf. And if there is an entanglement of religion,
they are the big bad wolf. They're not only that, Sonny, but they also have this ideology that women cannot do certain things, that like wearing the veil, they beat you up over that. Come on. Okay. But let's go back 1979. You know, we had our hostages at the embassy. How we forgot about that? How they, for a whole year, they kept them in, they kept the hostages in, in close quarters until back then, Jimmy Carter was our president and, we had Reagan. They were horrible and they still are. They haven't changed. They only got worse.
How do you fight against a system like that is, I guess, what I'm asking.
You're fighting against the worst thing. You're fighting against people who are not willing to adjust their thoughts. Like, with all due respect to the whole region, you got to give it to the UAE. You got to give it to Bahrain. You have to give it to Morocco. You have to give it to Saudi for allowing the change to accept Israel as a country.
So I kind of liken this to like a medical diagnosis. If you're told there's a problem at the root of the terror that's happening in the Middle East right now, and there's many well-founded theories too that Iran was behind, whether through funding or training, the October 7th attack. If you have this underlying cancer, right, and you're only treating the symptom, which is the latest incursion or the latest missile strike or the latest, how do you ever really fix what's going on? Like, what is the long-term? What does a long-term solution look like?
If you don't fix it now, it's going to repeat itself.
So the long-term game? What's the long game here?
Look, I don't know how long we have to fix it, because if we don't fix it, it's only going to get worse later.
Right. So that's what I mean. Like, how do you extricate that?
Well, you just have to believe in your leadership. Example here, whoever the next president, they have to take a real serious look at the Middle East, because they're very important partners for us. And we need to either stand with them or not, but we have to stand with them, you know, especially during, if it's a war, we're going to get pulled in.
Yeah, well, it's.
Are we ready for that war?
You answer that. Are we? I don't feel ready, but I'm just a regular, normal civilian. I mean, I know enough about. I read the news enough to understand that enrollment is down in our armed forces. And to be honest, the mental strength of any given American is not the kind of.
But
what it used to be.
How about the Israelis? How do you think they are tired? By the way, they are.
I'm sure they are tired.
They can't wait. I was talking to a good friend of mine. He's the son of the. Former prime minister who was assassinated in 1996, Yitzhak Rabin. I didn't want to say his name, but I said it. And I asked him in a text message, how you feel? He said, our government is so messed up and we need change of ideology and government because the people are tired of wars. Israelis are not the problem. Palestinians are not the problem. The governments are the problem.
And that's what I want to know how to fix it, Christopher. Like, this is such an American, the can-do American mentality. And I know it's gone wrong. It went wrong horribly in Afghanistan when we tried to graft a democratic system on other people that for some reason it just, I mean, I know why it didn't work because we left quickly, but that's a separate thing. But like, this is such an American. How can we help? How can we fix it, Christopher? It just feels so big, and it feels not great.
You got to start one day at a time. You got to start at the bottom. You have to start with areas that are most affected, and that's what you got to start. You can't take the whole problem at once. You have to take a piece of the pie, fix that. But the problem, you got too many people are on the take. Much corruption. Everybody wants a piece of the action. If you go to war, everybody's making money, building tanks, and you know. So where does it end? Where does it end? So for us, as Americans, I think we can help stop things. And I think, as I said earlier, I think that decision by our president is a good decision.
So how we help right now is by staying out, is what you're saying, at least in the short term, as it relates to Iran and Israel's interactions. You think how we help as America is just keeping out of it for now?
No, we cannot keep out of it. We are in it. However, we need to make sure that the Israelis do not respond.
Right.
Look, nobody got killed. I think they just wanted to let them know, hey, we know what you did. We're going to let you know you're not going to get away with it. This time, here what's going to happen. Next time might be different. Mm-hmm. And Israel, I think, is taking notice.
And when you look long term at this, is there a world where there is peaceful coexistence, particularly as it relates to Israel and Palestine? Understanding, and I think we have the mutual agreement, that terror is at the root of the issue here. Terror is the problem. The belief systems that are encouraging this type of terroristic behavior. This is not demonizing one group of people versus the next, but I am curious, just to sort of round things out here, Christopher, what long-term success looks like to you in that region?
Well, I don't think it's just terrorism. I think terrorism is probably a part of it. More importantly, it's just the mindset. You're dealing with hatred. You're dealing with history. I mean, dealing with years of ideology. You're dealing with, you know, harshness. I mean, you're dealing with a group that's believe and not. See, you've got a sector of Islam or Muslim are so far to the left that even the moderate Islam go, whoa, 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 that's not us. That's same with other religion, you know. So it has to do with religion, has to do with ideology, has to do with mindsets has to do with a lot of things. Terrorism becomes a caveat, but it's not just terrorism. History speaks for itself. And that's something, you know, we just cannot fix history. We have to learn from history, but we have to change things.
Well, I'm going to ask you one final question, because I know you're running out of time here. What does the ideal avatar person look like on each side? Say there is a world in which some stability or peace has been achieved. What would the average person be saying living in that world? Like, we fix this because we blah, or we are at peace now because, like, I'm asking you to kind of place yourself in this idyllic sort of best case scenario and situation. And it will have been fixed because what happened?
It's like a marriage. Sometimes you have to, even though you don't like to give in, you give in because it's going to help you live another 6 months in peace or 1 year in peace. In the world of politics, there's no such a thing as peace. There's policies. But I think more importantly is to understand if we can at least just come to some sort of somewhere we can just let our people live. If you start putting your people first and not yourselves, leaders like to put themselves, because that's who they become.
Addicted to power.
Well, you know, back in when I was with the U.S. government, I used to have a sign that says, what I do is not who I am. What I do is my job. Who I am is me. Because when I leave my job, that chair is going to be empty. But a lot of those guys become the chair.
Interesting.
And they become like the power to be. And they cannot let go of the power. But they have to let go and think about their people. For example, I have a dear friend in Israel who runs a very large tour company. I reached out to him. How are you? He goes, we're tired. My company is the lowest I've ever seen it. And he's done very well in the business. But right now, he's been about 7 months because of the situation between Israel and Hamas. And now this. So how long can they survive? And he's doing well. He can probably support himself for how long? But how about the others? Israel or the Palestinians or the Jordanians, the whole region. Because you see, when it hits one area, it hits everybody. Look at this. The airlines right now. Delta and American, United, excuse me, American and United stopped flying to Israel the minute that war started.
Wow.
It affects jobs, affects families, travel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I think to wrap this up, I just think that I hope and pray that both countries come to some sort of agree to disagree solution that will help their countries.
Right.
And put their garbage at the door.
Put their people first.
Put their people first, and that may not happen.
Well, Christopher, you are, as always, a wealth of information and perspective. I'm probably going to bother you again at some point if something significant happens to update us, but thank you for taking the time to spend with me today.
Well, it took 29 minutes, better than what you thought.
It's great. Yeah, we stole a few extra minutes, but I'm grateful. Chris, thank you so much. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, honey. Talk to you.